Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't care what the liberals say. I don't care what the naysayers say. This nation was founded as a Christian nation. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. There's only one God. There's only one God, and his name is Jesus. If you don't love America, you don't like the way we do things, I got one thing to say. Get out! We don't worship Buddha. I said we don't worship Buddha. We don't worship Muhammad. We don't worship Allah. We worship God. We worship God's Son, Jesus Christ.
Now that's Pastor Dennis Terry before introducing the esteemed Senator from Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum. Now the liberals are trying to turn this into Santorum's Reverend Wright moment. But when you think about it, he really isn't saying that if you're not a Christian, get out. What he's saying is if you don't like America, get out. That's very clear. And he says that this country was founded as a Christian nation, which is true. And that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, it is true. And he says we don't worship Buddha, which is true. We don't worship Muhammad, which is true. We don't worship Allah, which is true. So he didn't say get out if you don't worship Jesus. He said if you don't love America, get out. Nevertheless, the libs are trying to turn it into a Reverend Wright moment. You know, they're doing opposition research. And there's another soundbite that's worth playing before I leave politics completely after the first 3 minutes of the show. Because to be frank with you, it is impossible to believe anybody in the United States of America is at all interested in this campaign. It is incomprehensible to believe that there's a single human being left on the planet other than those who are in the business on any of the channels who would be interested in the words Obama, Romney, Santorum, Gingrich, or Neuron. I don't think anybody can take any more of it. And look how many more months we have to go. Lord only knows this is interminable. And it's interminably boring. And it's creating a terminus of pain in my brain. Oh, Maine, Charmaine. So therefore, I'm trying to avoid the entire subject. But we can't let it go yet because the genius Robert De Niro, well known for his movies, and he's a fabulous actor, as you well know. But like all actors, he's only an actor. As intelligent as he may be as a businessman, he is only an actor, and he has his opinions as I do. His opinions, unfortunately, are to the far left of the political spectrum, as are Obama's. And he made a statement saying that America's not ready for another white first lady. It was such an embarrassment that even Michelle Obama, who has great political instincts, said that that's out of line. But the only one of the candidates with the brains and the guts to stand up to Robert De Niro, and in a very dignified way, is the balloon man, because I'm not a fan of the balloon man. But you must admit that the balloon man is right in clips 4 and 5, so let's listen.
I do want to say one thing on behalf of both my wife and on behalf of Karen Santorum and on behalf of
forgot a name.
Ann Romney, and that is, I think, Robert.
Which
De
Niro white?
You
wrong. Didn't know he was talking on behalf of my wife. Oh yeah, you know, Calista. Right.
Racial terms. It has nothing to. These are fine ladies, as Michelle Obama. But this is not about the first lady. It's about the president, and that's where De Niro missed the whole point. De Niro is rich enough; he probably doesn't notice the price of gasoline. He's successful enough; he probably doesn't notice the unemployment rate. And as a Hollywood actor, he may well be short-sighted enough he hasn't seen what the deficit's going to do to our children and our grandchildren. But what De Niro said last night was inexcusable, and the president should apologize for him. It was at an Obama fundraiser. It is exactly wrong. It divides the country.
Yeah, he's right. He's right. And I, as I said, the fact of the matter is the Obama campaign was quick enough to jump on this and say De Niro was wrong, says white first lady joke was inappropriate. A spokesmouth for First Lady Michelle Obama said a racially tinged joke by actor Robert De Niro at a campaign fundraiser Monday night was inappropriate after Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich demanded the White House apologize. Spokesmouth Olivia Allaire said in a statement, "We believe the joke was inappropriate." What do you mean, you believe? Either it was inappropriate or it wasn't. See, again, parsing. That means they could decide later on that it was appropriate. While introducing the First Lady in New York City fundraiser, De Niro jokingly suggested that America isn't ready for a white First Lady. De Niro said, "Callista Gingrich, Karen Santorum, and Romney. Now, do you really think our country is ready for a white First Lady?" De Niro said, to laughter from the crowd. When someone in the audience yelled, "No!" De Niro continued, "Too soon, right?" So that's an example of the far left at work. And it was smart of Michelle's handlers to jump in on this. Because it isn't really about race. It's about policies. I'll tell you who I was thinking about this today. You know who would make a great first lady if you want to talk about looks? There is an African-American woman on the Weather Channel that I think, wow, I'd love to see her every day saying, because I know she loves America. I have no question about her loyalty to the country. You know what I'm saying? It's not about race. But you say, is it because she's a black lady? No, it's because she's a left-wing fanatic. And she has been all her life. And she has very, very frightening eyes. The first lady, in my opinion. She scares me. She looks like Madame Defarge. But you say, oh, it's because she's black. No, I said the weather lady, I really like her. There's a lady on the Weather Channel that's amazing. I watched her for years. I mean, I could watch her describing a drought, and I find it quite interesting, to be honest with you. Now, my mind isn't on any of this. You read the Twitter comments that people make to each other. Stop watching Fox News. The other one says, stop watching CNN. You're an idiot. You're a moron. You're a right-winger. You're a sociopathic left-winger. Please, how much can you take of this? These people are crazy. That's all they do is answer each other. So that's why I'm talking about it, because it has to be gotten rid of before we go into the important stuff. You don't want to talk about the killing of the Jewish children in France. That's, you know, you probably see it the way the EU does. It's the same as, well, earthquakes and tornadoes. Came out today that the murderer of these kids, who they haven't caught yet, even though they know he's the same one who shot the paratroopers, they know that for sure. They know it's the same gun, even though they didn't recover the gun. And they know everything about it, but they don't know who he is. Now they're saying he had a camera hanging from his neck while he was killing the kids and shooting them in the head. You hear this? Unbelievable. So America doesn't care about any of these things. The boxcars are rolling, and Wolf Blitzer's on to Tebow. Old Wolfie Blitzer. Forgot where he came from. But you can't blame him. Look how well he's done. Now, speaking about where we came from and where we're going, none of us know where we're going, but we all know where we came from. I can tell you that. And that's been said before, but not exactly the way I'm going to say it. You know, and I know, that I'm always working on something other than the radio show. So right now, my big project is, of course, Trickle Down Tyranny, which is coming out in 2 weeks, right after my birthday. And that's going to be a wonderful book for America to read, and I can't wait for you to get it, and we'll talk about it then. I'm also concurrently finishing the second novel in a Jack Hatfield series, Abuse of Power. Hey, somebody sent me a picture of a Barnes & Noble in Boca Raton. Abuse of Power is still in the bestseller's recent release list. So apparently I have a big audience in Boca Raton. I think that's where all of my 10 Jewish listeners live. But they must be buying the book every day for the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months now. Maybe they're buying hundreds of copies. I don't know how that works. I'm also working on my memoirs called Train Tracks, which will be out next Christmas after the election when you're bored out of your mind. And it's my childhood stories with stories you've never written. Some of them have been published before, but most of it will be brand new. So you got to hear this. You won't believe this. I'm planning my party. I'm a little party, 35, 40 people, right? And the menu, it's driving me crazy. I never used Evite before. Have you ever used Evite? It's a great little thing. Of course, they have ads on it for like, you know, I don't try not to look at the ads. What is wrong with people? You send them an invitation on Evite. It's as simple as clicking yes or no. And they send it back to my private email. Yes, I'm coming. So I have to send 5 emails. No, don't send it to my private email. Send it back to the Evite so I can keep track of the list. I can't believe how complicated it is to put together a party for 35 people, let alone run a campaign or manage a country or manage the world. I don't know how anybody does it, to be honest with you, which is why I work alone. But nevertheless, at the same time I'm preparing for my little celebration and my book launch, I am working on Train Tracks, which is my childhood memoirs, which will be out next Christmas from Harper. So my sister, I asked all my relatives to send me pictures of my childhood because I want to put a number of them in my book, right? Now listen to this. You got to hear this for a reason. I'm not just chatting. There's a point to it. Trust me. It's not about Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, Neuron, or Obama, or any of that. I get a bunch of pictures today. One of them is of me with a pair of pants that is at least six times too big, cut off at the knee. And it looks like a bum child sitting on a railroad siding. So I said, holy God, you know, when I rode Dead Man's Pants, many people thought I was exaggerating because, you know, it's very fashionable now. Everybody wants to have been poor. Everybody wants to tell you they grew up poor, even though they grew up, you know, middle class or with a silver spoon in their mouth. I said, this book is going to contain a picture of me with me wearing those pants because I couldn't believe my own eyes. I mean, I joked about it. These pants were at least six times too big. Sitting next to a dirt-strewn lot on Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. And I said, wow, from rags to riches, you know, from rags to riches. And it's all because I've worked hard and because it's America, the land of opportunity. This is the greatest country on earth. God bless America. I shall be right back. Savage.
I'm going down to Louisiana.
Another 4 years of Obama. Free guitar strings for everyone.
I'm going down to Nevada.
Going to Nevada to do some gambling. Get me a pretty girl there now. I got the travel passes from Obama. I'm going to get me one. Them girl, Nevada. Oh, Louisiana. Sorry. Louisiana. I thought he said Nevada. What's down in Louisiana? That's where the refinery is that Obama doesn't want to send the oil to. You know, I was talking about the Dead Man's Pants, so I actually wore pants that were hand-me-downs. They were not hand-me-downs. They were from Stiffs. I told you my father used to buy estates, so to speak, estates. Poor people. You go in and buy the whole household goods. The widow wanted to get rid of the old man's junk, you know, so including the clothing. And he'd bring home the clothing, and I knew it was a killer for me. Every time he'd bring home a good pair of pants, I knew it was coming. He'd say, take a look at this fabric. I dreaded the moment when he'd say, take a look at this fabric. And he would roll out the pants on his arm like a clothing salesman. He would say, this is some fabric. We're not going to throw this out. The next thing I knew, 2 days later, they were shortened at the knee like Abbott and Costello, not taken in the behind. And there I was. I swear there's a picture of me, but these are such shabby pants. I was going to ask you a question on the show, which, by the way, Jerry Lewis celebrated his 86th birthday. Always been one of my – I love the guy. I love everything he's ever done since I've been a little kid. I can't believe he's 86. He survived that with the you know, when he had the steroids and he's puffed. Remember that? He survived that. He had his party in the Friars Club. I'm not having it in the Friars Club. Obviously, anyway, so he was going to ask poverty. I was going to talk about. There is no poverty in America. You realize that. What is poverty? You know what poor is? Poor is not America today. Poor is hunger. I've tried to define what poverty is. First of all, you know there's no hunger in America. Between food stamps and government cheese, there is no hunger in America. It's a complete lie of the liberals. Poverty today is more or less gone in America. There are poor people, but most poor people live better than most middle class, lower middle class people did 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 70 years ago. So I want to ask you, if you were poor as a child, would you describe for the Savage Nation audience what your poverty really was like? What was poverty? What did it mean? I mean, we were poor. I didn't miss a meal in the sense we're poor, but I was never hungry. I was overfed. I had garbage clothing, you know, hand-me-down clothing. I lived in a tenement in the Bronx, and across the street I thought it was paradise because there were roses growing on a fence. But I look at it now with pictures of it. There was like it was a, you know, littered, garbage-strewn lot, you know what I'm saying? I can still smell the ailanthus plants, if you know what those are, walking through the wood lot. We'd play jungles. and trail each other. I remember they set a kid on fire. Oh, there were some bad kids in that neighborhood. One of them wound up shot to death. He became a Hell's Angel. The other one was his brother died in an electric chair. I won't even mention their names. They were really mean. But there was a kid in the neighborhood with red hair, and for some reason they picked on him, and they tied him to a tree. I remember to this day. And they started dancing around him and go, and they started a fire at his feet. They tried to set him on fire until his father came running, or a neighborhood man ran out and put the fire out and chased the kids away. They were nuts. You talk Lord of the Flies. It was amazing. So I'd be curious, if you were poor, I'd like to hear what poverty really was like, because I don't think anyone knows what poverty is in America. Today you think poverty is, oh, I only have a house and I don't have a country house, or we're poor because what? What was it? Most people are not really that poor. What is poverty? I would like to hear, and I'd like to spend one segment from you, the audience, the Savage Nation, for a moment. It's not political at all. It's not going to be to bash this one, lift up that one. Now, if I say Ryan, you know, Ryan's budget plan, most people don't even know who he is. Oh, yeah, that young fella, Ryan, he has a very nice, he has a nice game show. I know, I like that Ryan. He's a good guy. No, no, we're talking about an actual congressman with a plan that has about as much chance to succeed as I do of having my book appear on Fox News, Trickle Down Theory. He has as much. So, were you poor as a child? Florida, Judy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have to disappoint you. I came from a comfortable family.
Thank God.
Yeah, well.
I wanted to be comfortable because I remember when I hear my parents discussing other people's income, which everyone did, by the way, behind closed doors. They would whisper and say they're very comfortable. I didn't know what that meant was. I knew we weren't. That's all I knew.
No, we never worried because my dad was a successful attorney.
Oh, a lawyer in those days was as close to God as you can get.
Judge when he died, and he was very well thought of.
He was a judge, a judge, a judge, a jury, and an executioner. Hold on, we're going to take your story in a moment. If you were poor, tell us about it on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Look how you got me. Standing around crying.
Go Nevada. Go Nevada.
I know I don't
I got Obama you. Travel stamp.
But you're always
oh, we got the government travel stamp for Nevada. Harry Reid invite us. Give me a woman there, government woman, government woman, government woman. I'm gonna give me a government woman there. I got a travel stamp. Ooh, I got a love stamp from Obama. Give me a free love in Nevada. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You can see what mood I'm in after yesterday. I had a depression yesterday I haven't had in years. The shooting of those kids in France and the cover-up by the media got me so sick, I was wrecked. But I'm a very resilient man. I bounced back today for some reason. Some would call it manic depression, but it isn't. It's called a human being who feels things. And, you know, I actually feel the news. It starts to get to me like it's personal. And I have to be very careful. That's why today is a little different. So I'm talking about poverty. I'm talking about your poverty, my poverty, his poverty. My point is, what was your poverty like if you grew up poor? Let America really know, because you're going to tell stories today on this show that might shock people who don't realize what poverty really is. So let's go to the first caller. You're all invited to join the parade, 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, Roger, go ahead, please. You grew up poor. Tell us what it was like.
Yes, Dr. Savage. When Pop would buy us one pair of shoes a year, and it had to last all the way through the school year, when the soles ran out, we had to take cereal boxes and cut cardboard, put it in our shoes until Pop was ready to buy us another pair of shoes. Holes in our jeans, Mom would put patches, and if we...
Wait a minute, you sound awfully similar to Governor Jerry Brown. Are you the governor just having fun with me?
No, sir, this is...
Come on, I'm just... No, you sound like Jerry Brown, being you're calling from Sacramento. Come on, Roger, seriously, you actually put cardboard in your shoes?
I was born in Youngstown, Ohio, in a steel town, 1943. Grew up...
Oh.
40s and 50s, and my dad was a hard-working man, and I think he was trying to teach us a lesson on taking care of the things that were given to us.
Well, I did the same. In other words, I lined the shoes. I had more than one pair of shoes, but I lined them up under my bed, and I kept them polished. Would you believe it? I've always been the same, very fanatic about taking care of my things ever since I grew up with so little. I took care of what I had. It's very interesting, isn't it?
That's how I learned.
And no, it's funny. Even though, let's say, you grow older and you get a little successful and you have money, I still won't leave lights on in the house. And people laugh at me. They say, what are you turning off lights for? What, are you cheap? You know what my answer is? I don't know. It's just in me. Why not turn a light bulb off if you're not in the room? Why must it be on? Do you still do a thing like that?
Well, the audience won't believe me, but I do. I do. I'm sitting in my house. It's cold right now. I have the heat turned off. I have my water.
I love it. Well, I don't like heat to begin with. It dries me out. They think that they're living like in the Russian Revolution with me. They think it's like Dr. Zhivago in my house. I'd rather walk around like with a coat on in the house than run heat. Not to save money. I don't like heat. It makes me feel sick. So you really grew up that poor, but you did okay later on, or you're still poor?
Well, I'm doing better now. I've learned how to invest. I lived in a travel trailer for 19 years of my life and just got into a little house. I'm starting to save money, and but the government seems to be wanting to take a lot of it away, so I'm kind of drifting back into the financial situation I was.
Uh-oh, not good. Yeah, but you're never going to go back to that level of poverty of putting cardboard in your shoes. Thank you very much for sharing. 1-800-449-8255. No, here's a caller. You're not going to believe this. Ann Arbor, Mich. Rick, welcome to the Savage Nation. Tell us your poverty story.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was born in the 50s, and my father moved around a lot. We lived in tents, and actually back then the tents didn't have bottoms in them, so when it rained, we had to dig ditches around the tent to keep from washing out.
That is amazing. This is almost like the Grapes of Wrath. You say you moved around. Were they itinerant workers or what?
They just moved from factory to factory, but we still had food. We still had government food. We had government cheese. We had government milk. We had the government meat. You know, we didn't have food stamps, but we still had food.
So in that sense, you have to say thank God the government distributed excess food. I mean, you have to agree with that, right?
We go to food banks, you know.
But I'm saying that what I'm saying, there is a place for government assistance. I'm not one of these fanatics who say there should be no government help for the poor. I mean, people would starve to death. Don't you think, Rick?
Can't really say we were poor because we still had food in our
stomach. I'm saying A, he's saying B. But, Rick, wouldn't you agree with me that there's a role for the government in assisting people who are poor?
Right. If there's no means, if they have no means.
That's correct. And if they're not able-bodied and they can't find work, you got to help people. You can't let them starve to death. See, that's why I say I'm an independent conservative. I don't take this hard line, oh, let them find a job, let them go out and create a business. That's such rubbish. There's no way to do that in some cases. Absolutely no way whatsoever. Well, I'm glad that, you know, this is turning into a very good topic, by the way. But, you know, what is a vacation, you know, when you were poor? Think about that. We had we lived in the apartment. My father always had a car because he needed it for his business to go down to Manhattan to his little store to make deliveries to the man. One of my books I wrote, they'll all come out when he delivered the bronzes out there to the guy with the one breast, you know, the circus half man, half woman. That's a heck of a story to believe these things existed, but they did. So we had an apartment, a car, but nothing else, you know. Dead man's pants, but I never wanted for a meal, and I never felt poor. See, that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make a point is that most kids don't even know they're poor. If they have the security of parents and friends and some family around and they eat, they're not poor. They don't know poverty. It's like a Sajat Ray movie, if you know what I'm referring to. The old movies, the films about poverty in India. In many ways, I used to relate to those movies because those lives were very rich. There's a lot of richness, by the way, in poor neighborhoods and a lot of poverty in rich neighborhoods. You've heard that? Because you know what I'm talking about. How many McMansions have you been in with the stainless this and the stainless that and a 1,000-square-foot kitchen that has never been cooked in? There's no smell of food. No one ever sits around a table, right? So that's what I mean by poverty inside the rich home and et cetera. I don't know if that still applies truthfully, but I know that in the immigrant communities today, I see it myself. If I drive through a community near where I live, which is largely Hispanic immigrants, You think it looks any different than it looked the way my life looked to me as a kid? It doesn't. I see most of the people struggling off to work. They're going back to crowded apartments with lots of relatives. And they're all together, and they have the ups and downs of life together. And some of them, you know, already have a car, and the one who has the car tries to show it off that it's better than his neighbor's car. It's identical to my upbringing. In that sense, there's a continuum of the immigrant life in America. Now, you could say from that point forward, though, where does it differ? The level of gangs in this country today was never equal to the level of gangs amongst the poor in my day, for example. You could argue maybe it was. If you go back to the early days when the Italians came here, I know you're not going to want to hear it, and the early days of the gang wars between the Irish and the Italians and the Jews, they were shooting each other in the streets with machine guns. That was before my time. How different is that when you think about it from the MS-13 tattooed people killing themselves today or the Crips and the Bloods 10 years ago when they were going through their power struggle? Was it any different? Was it a larger number of people killed? How do you compare Murder Incorporated in the days of the Euro immigrants to the Murder Incorporated of today? I mean, was it worse then or is it the same today? So you can over exaggerate the crime wave in America if you don't really look at the historic context. And I haven't done an epidemiological study in the sense of, you know, what the rate of murder was. I don't really know. Well, of course, we'd all like a cleaner, safer country. But I'm not so sure it's much different than it was, is the point, even in those days amongst the Euro immigrants in that regard. There are big differences, though. The Euro immigrants all wanted to learn English. They all wanted to be American, with exception usually of the old country people who didn't. I mean, my grandmother never spoke a word of English. I don't know if you know this. I've told you this before. She never spoke to me in one word of English that I remember. She didn't know English. She didn't understand it. She was a very old woman when she got here, and she was very stoic. She didn't demand very much. There was no welfare. No one asked for the government to give her a dime. I'm going to put a picture of her you see her. This woman was really good. I loved her. That was my Russian grandmother. She looks like an American Indian with, like, very stoic, like the high cheekbones. That's where I got my good looks from, I'm pretty sure. I mean, no disrespect to the other side of the family, but an artist once told me I'd make a good subject because I have high cheekbones and I'd be a very good subject of a sculpture. I'm actually having a sculpture made, a bust made in my head. I never liked the word bust of a head. I didn't understand that as a kid. I would turn red when someone said, "What do you think of the bust?" I thought they were referring to the chest. Yeah, I didn't know it meant the head, you know, bust. Look at the bust. Because my father was in the antique business. So if someone say, "Can I see that bust?" I thought they were talking dirty to him. I run away in the back of the store. My face would turn. Kids don't know. They mix things up. But I have a sculptor, a very famous guy from San Francisco. I'm not going to mention his name yet, who's going to be sculpting my head. Now, it's an interesting story unto itself. Why? What kind of ego does it take to have yourself sculpted while you're living? I don't know. I want to do it. Why? I'll tell you exactly why. There's a Chinese restaurant. See, everything relates to the food. There's a Chinese restaurant I go to in San Francisco where the owners, I love these people, they have like giant bronze statues of the head, busts now, of the grandfather and the mother and father who built the restaurant, and then the grandfather and grandmother. And I love looking at them because they have the dates of the grandmother's death, and she like died at like very young. And it was like she died in 1938. So I said, "What happened?" He said she was killed in the revolution in China at that time. But the point is that these are photo likeness busts that were made by a Chinese sculptor of bronze. They're great. Like you send photographs, and for some way to do it, they put it into a computer, and then they sculpt the thing, maybe by machine, and they come out fantastic. I'm not having one of those done. I'm not having a photo likeness done. This sculptor is very famous all over the world. He's done a couple of books. He's going to do an artistic rendition. God knows what it's going to look like. I hope it's not too, you know, overbearing. But nevertheless, why? I don't know why I'm doing it. I want one for me and one for each of my kids. And that's about it. And by the way, if you wanted a small little autographed copy, they're only $14.99 available in tin in Bolivia. We're going to sell them on a site in Bogota. So, poverty does suck. There's no question about it. Robert in New York, tell us your poverty story.
We used to go on vacation to the fire hydrant at the end of the block. I mean, that was our big thing. And if my father, from his two jobs, saved enough money, we could actually go to Orchard Beach on the bus, which wasn't too often.
I absolutely agree with you. The hydrant was the swimming pool.
Yeah, but I didn't didn't know.
And by the way, the cops would come by and they would look the other way because the poor kids were basically waiting in the fire hydrant water in the street. Remember?
Yeah, but then they came along with these caps that made it come out a little bit less than just the full force, which was because I'm a little bit younger than you, so we didn't.
Oh, they put a restrictor on it. No, in my day, it was like Niagara Falls would come out. In fact, if you stood in front of it, it would throw you across the street. It was so much fun, the force of those fire hydrants, now that you remind me.
Oh, yeah, we loved it. And the cars were coming by, and they, you know, we didn't care. They didn't stop for us. But, you know, who cares?
You know, it's funny. You bring back memories. I can, to this day, when you mention it, I remember the smell of pavement on a hot day where it got so stifling hot that when water hit the pavement, the smell of the pavement coming, the asphalt coming off from the water hitting it, you know, that smell is amazing. It comes back. It's like remembrances of things past, but we're not talking about the Petite Madeleines here. We're talking about asphalt and water.
Remember your feet sticking into the asphalt before the water hitting it was so hot?
Yes, I do. I do. Unbelievable. Today they would call the EPA and have you arrested for stepping in the asphalt.
Either that or will you get child abuse for letting your kid step in the asphalt.
Right. Who knows what it did to you? You know, it might have shortened your lifespan. Do you ever think that that's why you are the man you are, listening to talk radio instead of making a living at this hour of the day?
I'm just driving home from work, so.
Come on. I'm pulling your leg. Speaking of your legs, I'm sending you a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Thanks for that trip down memory lane. I hope you don't mind my doing this today, because if you think I want to go to the news sites, which are pretty good. I mean, there's stories, you know, but who wants to talk about U.S. lets allies off hook for Iran trade? Oh, that's a hot one. GOP budget takes aim at the dependent culture. Very nice. And what chances there of Representative Paul Ryan getting his plan to cut the deficit by overhauling entitlements in an effort to reform the dependent culture? Zero. Here's another story. Bristol Palin waits for her Obama MAR call. She asks Obama why, when $1 million donor savaged her and her brother, he said nothing. That's so boring. Physics professor jailed in Argentina on drug charges. So, what, professors don't use drugs? Esteemed North Carolina physics professor denies accusations that he tried to smuggle drugs out of Argentina. That's a non-story. No one knows what there's no news anymore. No, the Jewish school shooting, that's not a real story. You don't want to cover that. Here in America, that got swept right off the... Here in San Francisco, wasn't even allowed to be in the Chronicle or the Examiner, because any story about Jews are verboten here in the New World Order. No story about Jews as victims. They can only be perpetrators of violence to the vermin here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Obama campaign calls De Niro comment inappropriate. He looks like a homeless bum. What's with the hair? Let me give you some advice if you're over 50. This is a very important grooming tip for all men over 50. Let me put this in a very delicate manner. Don't let your hair grow long. I mean, you may think you look dashing, you know, like you're still a hippie. You don't. You look horrible. It's the giveaway of an old man. An older man should have his hair cut very short, incidentally. Ask anybody. If you're an older man, if you cut your hair short, you look younger. Beards, forget about it. Unless they're trim like a U-boat captain, you know, up to the standards of like U-237, the beard also gives you an aged look. You either look like you're a member of Hamas or that you're on welfare somewhere in Williamsburg. So there's nothing distinguished about this look that De Niro has right now. Two tax brackets, 10 and 25%. I would love that if Ryan got that. I mean, two tax brackets, 10 and 25%, that's a great plan. I'd like to have the 10%. Do you have a choice? Can you say I'll pay 10%? And if you're Buffett, you can say I'll pay 25%. Is that how that works? Or they assign you a tax bracket? I went into a break already. I'll be right. All right, look, I got a piece of breaking news for you that is so shocking that I got to give it to you right now. We'll go back to the poverty thing in a minute. Here's a headline, has not made it onto any sites yet. I was searching an Israel site. Here it comes. France clears three neo-Nazi suspects in Jewish school shooting. Police now looking into whether killer was Islamic extremist. Now, you know, yesterday I told you that they were doing anything they could to blame this on white racists. They were making it up as they went along. The vermin in the media, the EU correspondents, the rats, the rats across the media landscape were dying for the killers to be white racists. Now, I didn't know who it was, but the evidence did not appear to be that of white Nazis. Okay, it appeared to it had the fingerprints of Islamic extremism all over it, the killing of the Jewish kids. So now I'm giving you breaking news. It's going up on the top of michaelsavage.com. Police now looking into whether killer was Islamic extremist, clearing three neo-Nazi suspects in Jewish school shooting. Listen to the story. It's short. Police have cleared three neo-Nazi suspects in the killing of three school children and a rabbi at a Jewish school in Toulouse. The suspects were former soldiers who were discharged from duty for neo-Nazi activity in 08. All three were interrogated by the police. French authorities now believe the killer was motivated by Islamic extremism or racism, Israel Radio reported. Now, why is this a very important story? It's very important because the media smeared non-Islamics. Okay, let's start with that. I'm putting it in a way maybe you don't expect. It's also very important for you to understand how idiotic the media is in jumping to conclusions with their knee-jerk conclusions in advance of a story's evolution. I told you it was fishy. I'm the only one in the media who dared cover it. I'm the one who told you the gun story was a lie. It turns out I'm right. They didn't recover the gun. They didn't recover the guns or the bullets. Remember we covered this yesterday? And they were saying same gun, same gunman, neo-Nazi racism because the soldiers, bull! It didn't make sense. It was a lie. It was constructed out of whole cloth simply because they're afraid of the Muslim majority in France. 5 million Muslims in France, 600,000 Jews, their politicians. Take a guess, whichever way the wind blows, that's the way they go. Anyway, today the news is they're looking for an Islamic extremist. That's the news that you won't see in your newspaper tomorrow. Okay? Okay, now?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Poems of our time, Bob Dylan, one of the greatest poets of our time. But the reason I'm playing Like a Rolling Stone is because I relate to this song. I'm a man alone, you know that. I'm not allowed on any of the television shows, I'm never referred to, and yet I have a huge audience, and you're it. So why do I do the show? I do the show primarily for my own sanity in many ways, because the world is so confusing. The world is, the words I want to use are not confusing. The horror of the world is getting so grotesque that sometimes I don't know what to hold on to keep going, never mind get up in the morning and try to form my thoughts to even do a show. The horror of it is so overwhelming. And yesterday, the slaughter of the little kids by this gunman in France who went up and shot him in the head. Little kids, I can't fathom. I mean, I know children die in war. I know that children are collateral damage. But to go up and target little defenseless children and shoot them in the head, especially when it's only 70 years since Hitler killed over 1 million Jewish children, took them off the planet. Who did they hurt? Nobody. So the point is, it got me crazy watching that yesterday. Now, I wake up today, I don't see the story anywhere. The local San Francisco papers, since it's in its own way, they think that they're progressives of our time. I've never seen anything like the San Francisco political scene, the San Francisco newspapers. I've never seen anything like this. They didn't even cover the story. They wouldn't cover the story because it makes people sympathetic towards Jews. This is how psychotic and whacked out these so-called progressives are. I wake up today, it's nowhere. Fox dropped it, CNN dropped it, zero. And I'm doing a show now for an hour, the last hour, about poverty. You know, joking about my childhood in the Bronx and asking you what your poverty story is. And a story comes up confirming everything I said to you yesterday. Now, I didn't say it just for effect, nor did I say it to bash Muslims. I said it because I used my intellect and I used my powers of reason, and I came to the conclusion that the storyline that was coming out of France from the police was rubbish from the top to the bottom. They said at first it was neo-Nazis who did it. I said, no, it has all the earmarks of an Islamic murderer. Just came out minutes ago that the French police cleared three neo-Nazi suspects in the killing of the Jewish school children. They're now looking for Islamic extremism, an Islamic extremist for having done it. Now, here's another report. It's starting to filter out. I put it up on my website. Here it comes out now. Neo-Nazi soldiers not responsible for Toulouse shooting. They were dying for it to be a white man who did it. Here's the headline. Here's the story. The three former French soldiers who were suspected of involvement in the deadly shooting at a Jewish school in Toulouse on Monday have been cleared of all suspicion. The news website France Info reported, citing a police source. According to reports published moments ago, French police investigating the fatal shootings of a teacher and three children at a Jewish school in Toulouse were searching for the three soldiers who were dismissed from the army a few years ago after being photographed while giving Nazi salutes in front of a swastika flags. Monday's deadly shooting came just days after three soldiers from the same 17th Parachute Engineer Regiment with which the dismissed trio served were shot dead in broad daylight in Montauban, 30 miles away last Thursday. Two of the murdered soldiers were Muslim. But France Info's report published Tuesday said the three neo-Nazis were located by police and cleared of any suspicion. A police official told the website that two of the former troops were interrogated after the shooting attack on the Jewish school, and the third was questioned after the attack in Montauban. Ynet's correspondent Toulouse added that according to reports in France, one of the three neo-Nazis voluntarily reported to a police station to be interrogated. And read it on and on and on and on. It doesn't bring the children back from the dead at all. It never will. But the fact of the matter is, it shows you a couple of things. It shows you the bias of the vermin in the media. That's number one. It shows you the insanity of the European Union leadership, number two. And it also shows you that Michael Savage is the only one in the American media who dared use reasoning and logic to analyze this story, as I've done many times for you on this show, which again confirms the validity of talk radio, which again confirms the validity of your listening to the show, which again confirms that it's worth your while to tune into the show, even if from time to time I may get depressed and despondent from the news, or time to time I don't want to talk about the news, which is most of the time lately. Nevertheless, I got to tell you that your willingness to reason with me, your willingness to help me think out loud to get to the bottom of some of the perplexing issues of our time is what makes talk radio the greatest medium left on earth. It's the most interactive of all, and it's still the best for those reasons that I've just described, and I thank you for listening. 1-800-449-8255. JT in Houston, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
All right, Michael, I'm going to try to get this out. The killing of the Iranian scientist, nuclear scientist, the other week was done, according to the Iranians, by Israelis on motorcycles. And you know, Iranians can get into France real easy. They have a big French influence. What they're trying to do is just send a message right back to Israel. Hey, you can kill on motorcycles, we'll do the same thing. So it's definitely got to be.
But boy, but why would they kill children? These are not nuclear engineers. They're just little children, 3 years old.
It's all for the mind, all for the hit them in the gut. It's like shoot them in the gut. You're going to kill our guys. We're going to get uglier and dirtier. We're going to get meaner. That's what they're trying to send a message to.
Well, then the Israelis should drop a nuclear bomb on one of their plants to get meaner yet. I don't know when the Jews are going to learn what it's going to take to survive, but hey, look, it's been a long time since Golda Meir was in Israel. Apparently the men there have no pants. I don't know what the men in Israel have anymore. The leadership is gone. There's no leadership in Israel. None. None whatsoever. What are they waiting for? For a city to go up in smoke?
Why do they need to come here and tell us on TV what they might do? Just, you know what they ought to do is do it.
I agree 100%. I'm sick and tired of hearing what they might do. Just do it already, okay? Let's wake up to it tomorrow. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449. If you want to comment on this story or the poverty story, we're open for business. 1-800-449-8255. We have, remember yesterday, I want to read the questions for you yesterday on the show. Why was the media calling the shooting of Jewish children in France random? Remember, first they said random, then they said serial killer, then they said neo-Nazis, remember? Remember how they were trying to throw you off the track of anyone except Islamic extremists? My best, my very best, to get somebody else in the media to talk about the mass murder conducted at Fort Hood by the Muslim major Nidal Hassan. I was trying, with the emphasis on the killings in Toulouse, to get somebody in the media. I was praying to God that Fox, that one of them would have the guts to stand up to the dictatorship at Fox News and start asking the question about why has Major Nidal Hassan, the perpetrator of the Fort Hood massacre, not been brought to trial. I was praying somebody would have the guts to do it at CNN, but thus far nobody will touch that story. And we know why the Fort Hood massacre is not being talked about, and that is because it would be a grave embarrassment to Barack Hussein Obama, not because he was behind it, don't get me wrong, but because any connection between Muslims and terrorism in America is verboten in the United States under this administration for reasons you can pretty much figure out. I want you to listen to the random montage from yesterday on the Savage Nation.
The shootings happened just as parents were dropping their children off at the Jewish secondary school.
Basically, random attacks carried out by a gunman on a motorcycle who drives up and shoots into a crowd of people.
There have been other shootings in that town, Nick, of a mysterious nature, let us say.
It's too early to tell whether definitively all these shootings are linked.
Killer arrives on a motorbike and then starts shooting randomly. Just started shooting randomly.
Random attacks.
Mysterious nature.
Shooting randomly.
Well, it isn't random, and it wasn't neo-Nazi. Now they're looking for a Muslim extremist. God knows they'll never find him. I doubt very much that they'll ever find him unless they give a $20 million reward and one of his neighbors or one of his cohorts turns him in. I doubt very much that they're going to ever find him. So we could talk about anything else if you want. I mean, there are other news stories. There's nothing quite as breaking news as that one, but you're not going to find it on any websites yet. I had a search for that one. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go back to the poor stories. Tell us about your poverty stories. You know you're poor when you're not even allowed into Macy's to shoplift. Drum roll. I'm trying to make some up on the spot to change the tone of the show. Let's see. You know you're poor when the dog gets nervous every year at Thanksgiving. Drum roll. You know you're poor when the only things you see on the kitchen table are elbows. You know you're poor. Well, you know, you can make it up any way you want. But you see, it's very fashionable to say you were poor. I'll never forget when Al Gore was running for the presidency back in the 1800s. Seems like 1825, before he stumbled upon the golden gold global warming scheme, and he never talked about it again. When he said, well, I and Tipper, we grew up, we lived in a trailer. Remember that? The guy grew up with a golden spoon in his mouth. But it became very fashionable for everybody to claim that they were poor when they were young. That's the hottest ticket now. The only one who, to his credit, isn't saying he was poor, because he never was Mitt Romney. He doesn't have to. I mean, I wish that I never was poor. My eternal dreams as a child were wishing I was not poor. I dreamed every day of my life that my father was rich. I never wanted to be poor. Who wants to be poor? What kind of idiot wants to grow up poor? What do you think? There's nobility? There's no nobility in being poor. It's horrendous. It's horrible. But real poverty is starvation. As far as I can tell, hunger is poverty. Other than that, children don't even know poverty. If a child's loved, if he has family, he has friends, he has a roof over his head, and he eats, he's not poor, okay? You know who's poor? I'll tell you who's poor. I'll tell you what child is poor. A child growing up in Beverly Hills who never sees his father and mother and has a nanny from Guadalajara today and from Oaxaca tomorrow and never sees his mother cook and never sees his father and mother holding hands, that's a poor child. And guess what that child becomes? An Obama donor. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Problem loading page. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The big headline that you're not seeing on any website is that while yesterday the vermin in the media all of the DNC students who couldn't do anything else who became journalists were reporting that it was the perpetrators of the murder, the murders, the massacre in France were neo-Nazis and such. The news story is that the French police have said no. They've reviewed those three guys, they paratroopers, and they're out of the picture. They didn't do it. They're looking at an Islamic extremist. They will not make it to your local paper too quickly. But news story's coming out. The French gunman's victims were all shot in the head. All seven victims of the shooter, now thought to be an Islamic extremist, spreading terror in southwest France, were killed with bullets to the head. At such close range of the gunfire burned the skin, a prosecutor said Tuesday. And we don't want to go into any further details, but anyone who would shoot a child in the head, a 2-3-year-old child, this is not getting even for the killings of the Iranian nuclear scientists. This is something different. This is ramping it up to another level. So the gunman that they were calling yesterday as a the neo-Nazis, this and that, and God knows they're bad enough. They're not the ones who did it. In fact, one of them himself went to the police station to prove he wasn't the one. All I can say is may the monster who committed this crime burn in hell. What else can you say about it? There's nothing else you could say about this. And there's nothing you can talk about. Sadly enough, there's nothing more that we can talk about. Anyone listening to this show should understand that anger, hatred, and bigotry exist in the human condition. And there's almost no way to control it. That anger, hatred, and bigotry has always existed. It will always exist. It'll never go away. And so, yeah, they blamed a fascist right-winger in the beginning, but it turned out not to be. Now the police are saying it's a Muslim extremist. 1-800-449-8255. Horrible story. I don't want to relive it again. God knows what the families are living through today. That's all I can say. Let's go to the callers. Jerry in Las Vegas, tell us about your poverty story.
Michael, a couple months ago you were talking about men don't read, and I have a relationship with reading and poverty.
Go ahead.
I read all the time. I'm constantly reading, and here's the poverty part of my reading. When I was a youngster, my siblings and I, there were five of us, they'd always talk about how much I would read. And the reason I would read so much was because our wallpaper was actually newspaper. No matter which way I looked, I couldn't help but learn how to read.
No, that's very amazing. So your folks were so poor they used newspaper as wallpaper. And then what, they shellacked it over?
Right. And, Michael, you remember the incandescent light bulbs? They
yes.
were so precious to us as youngsters that no matter where we moved, we took those light bulbs with us, and it's like they never went bad. As opposed,
that's amazing. So you're saying because your wallpaper was newspaper, whichever way you turn in the house, you were reading.
Exactly.
That's
Michael,
astounding.
Jerry,
are you still there? Jerry, if you name the new book, if you name the book of mine that's coming to the bookstores April 3rd, you're going to get a free copy. What's the name of it?
Trickle Down Tyranny.
Oh, you see, you got a good memory, and a copy is going to go out to you in the next day or two. 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel learning today that the media misled you yesterday into thinking it was neo-Nazis who caused the slaughter of the Jewish kids? What do you have to say to the people in the media who said that it was not Islamic extremism? What do you feel today hearing that the same people in the media told you yesterday it was random or a mass murderer? How do you feel today? How do you feel about Michael Savage being the only person in the media who dared talk about it, use common sense and reason with you yesterday, who've been proven right today? How do you feel about these topics? I think it's a damn story. It's a very big story for talk radio, incidentally. It shows you the validity of talk radio, if nothing else. That's how I see this. How do you feel about Obama killing the Keystone Pipeline while gas prices are rising? You want to get very political? How do you feel about that?
Savage.
Well, the headlines that I'm going to read to you now should provoke additional conversation on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Top right, France clears neo-Nazi suspects in Jewish shooting. French police are now looking into whether the killer was an Islamic terrorist. Funerals planned in Jerusalem for victims of attack on Jews. You got to see the heartbreaking picture of a grandfather with a broken heart leaning on an ambulance, or a hearse, rather, if you want to look at that. If your mind runs towards sympathy or such, you'll understand what heartbreak is and poverty. Obama campaign calls De Niro comment inappropriate when the actor said, "Do you really think our country is ready for a white first lady?" Sorry, Robert, but it isn't a movie that you're involved in now. You better get someone to write your scripts. Obama order revises authority to nationalize resources for defense. That's got a lot of people frightened because it looks like the Alfred E. Newman of the White House has grabbed more power. That's right. Alfred E. Hussein Obama seems to have grabbed more power. I found an article that I put on my website from 09 written by Rachel Marsden in Human Events where it says, "I'm still banned from entering the United Kingdom. The kingdom, where is my human rights?" The answer is, I have no human rights. Apparently, a snail has more human rights than a conservative does in the United Kingdom. But the leader of the Free World's English division says he loves Obama because he tucked him into bed on Air Force One. U.S. drivers heading to Mexico for cheaper gas. Head of Obama's job council voting for Romney. Big embarrassment. Mayor Rahm says Chicago has a unique gang problem. 10 killed, 39 wounded in a weekend bloodbath. Terrible. Media scrub reports of Obama daughter in Mexico. 25 Secret Service agents. Hey, it's just a vacation. Like mother, like daughter. Mom likes to travel. Nothing wrong with that. Why shouldn't you pay for it, you moron? I mean, you could give up a little more so that the Obamas can enjoy royalist vacations. That's, they're entitled to it. Why shouldn't you go to Mexico at a time like this? What else do I have on the website? Obama's TSA humiliates and searches three-year-old in wheelchair. EU foreign chief lumps murder of Jewish children in France with, quote, other terrible circumstances in speech to Palestinians. Take a look at the dough-faced neo-Nazi there who calls herself a progressive. What else is on the website that's worth telling you about? Home invasion. Killing ends 65-year marriage. An elderly woman died after a... Oh, I can't even read it. This is in England now, a home invasion? They never heard of home invasions in England until a couple met and married within a month and stayed together for 65 years only to be parted after home invader beat wife to death. Nancy Strait, age 85, was sexually assaulted and battered to death by burglar. Her husband, Bob, 90, suffered a broken jaw and broken ribs in attack. Police have arrested 20-year-old Tyron Dale David Woodfork. I don't know if there's a picture. Oh, there's a picture of him. Oh, they ran a picture of him in England. I don't know if they're going to be a... Well, it could be that since the perpetrator of this horrendous crime on this couple in England is not a white man, it could be that the newspaper will be closed down by the authorities in England. Tyron Dale David Woodfork was arrested a day after the attack on complaints of first-degree murder, burglary, assault with a dangerous weapon, and two complaints of armed robbery. Why would anyone rape an 85-year-old woman who's... This man served in the 101st Airborne Division in World War II, suffered a broken jaw, broken ribs, and severe bleeding from the beating that this piece of garbage, Tyron Dale David Woodfork, inflicted upon him. That's the country, that's the world we're living in today. The couple went on to have 6 children, 18 grandchildren, about 50 great and great-great-grandchildren, all after marrying a month after meeting, and they were raped and beaten by this piece of human trash. He should only rot in hell. But you know that there's going to be stories about his impoverished background. So that just came out of England. Terrible story. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Okay, Las Vegas, Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, just a comment, Michael, about the press. I would just like to tell them to please tie their tennis, their shoes before they go running to give a story. Okay, their integrity tennis shoes. They should just tie them before they go running and give their points.
Why in the world would they all rush to judgment yesterday and start spreading the lie that their Jewish children were executed by a white supremacist, by neo-Nazis, or by a mass murderer, a serial murderer? Why would they do that?
Because they want that to be the truth, Michael.
And you mean if they repeat a big lie often enough, it will become the truth, as Goebbels taught their grandfathers?
Exactly. It was true 50-some years ago, 60 years ago. It's true now.
Awful. It's just awful. They have really become the neo-fascists of our time, haven't they? The so-called progressives who live within the big lie. They are the big lie. The neoliberal, or shall I say the neo-progressive, is really the neo-fascist. They are living the big lie. They're perpetrating the big lie.
You know, the definition of truth is fidelity to the original. And there's no fidelity in these guys, all right?
Well, look, without blowing my own horn, I'm very proud of myself that I had the guts to talk about it yesterday and to say that logic dictates that this is not true. The story they were putting out with the guns and the calibers, the whole story didn't make sense to me, Jim. I was the only one in the media who analyzed it that way.
Well, that's because you're using logic, Michael, and you're not using your own emotional wherever.
Well, I understand that logic is considered racist now in Europe. I realize if you use logic, it's a white man's trick. According to the European Union, if you use logic, you're using an Aristotelian trick promulgated by the ancient Greeks to build Western civilization. And so therefore, since Western civilization has to go in order to support the edifice of progressive pornography, anyone who uses logic in that manner is considered a racist and should be tried for crimes against the greater humanity, according to the EU.
Exactly. And God forbid if we tell the truth, like you were stating, you know, I mean, that's just offensive.
Well, you know how rough the talk radio business is today. Telling the truth is almost considered the most dangerous thing you can do, unless you want to talk about sports or tell off-color jokes. Then you can survive in talk radio. But if you actually get into the news as it is and tell the truth, you're running a very big risk here. You think I don't know it every day? I mean, I know what I'm facing every day on the radio. I don't know how long this could last. I'll be frank with you. I have a tremendous show. It's very popular. But the powers that be are terrified of the truth, and they're running scared. You know, I don't have to spell this out for you. They are frightened right now, and they shouldn't be, because the pendulum is going to swing very rapidly in the other direction. And so we'll just leave it at that. That's all. 1-800-449, what else, is on my website that's worth talking about. Free Savage Nation newsletter offers all things Savage. Yeah, you can get on my list for free, and you get a newsletter, which is beautiful. Then you get on that list. That's nothing. You get it for nothing in your inbox. You can go to Amazon.com, and you can order Trickle Down Tyranny. So when the book comes out, it's like in the top five. So that the message itself is sent through the news media. Michael Savage hits another home run with Trickle Down Tyranny, crushing Obama's dream of the socialist states of America. I hope you don't leave me in the lurch on this book. It's real important to me and to you that you do exactly what you did with Trickle Up Poverty, or this time you do it in an even bigger way. You have to do it for me and for the country. You must. You have to send a message. You have to send the message in the bookstore if you believe that poverty is rewarded. Success is punished. Our worst enemies are praised, but our allies stiffed. Where the military is used as a pawn. Our border is descending into chaos while corporations and cronies make off with all the wealth. Is anything that I said on the above false? No, it's all true. So pre-order your copy today. Go and do it at Amazon. Or go to the bookstore when it comes out April 3rd. Okay, what would you like to talk about? I've given you a whole load of news stories. I've given you the old story on the poverty thing. Here's how to spot a terrorist, according to Big Sis Napolitano. The so-called U.S. Department of Homeland Security has put out a presentation that aims to educate people on recognizing terrorists and how to report them. The report is entitled Terrorism Awareness and Prevention. It warns that people yawning, developing goosebumps, and appearing fidgety could all be potential terrorists, according to the report. It said the signs will become particularly evident in a person's eyes, face, neck, and body movements. If an individual has a cold stare, a trance-like gaze, or wide flashbulb eyes, they may be a terrorist, according to the report. If they seem to exaggerate a yawn during conversation, repeatedly touch their face or ears, or excessively watch a clock or fidget, these may also be indicators of a terrorist, according to Janet Napolitano. If they pace, tremble, perspire, or have goosebumps, these also may be indicators of terrorism. However, they go on to say, citizens should never use race or religion as factors for reporting suspicious activity. In other words, a nun who is yawning and sweating should be strip searched, but a Muslim in a full headscarf with a ticking time bomb on his back should be ushered onto the 747, because then you'd be using race or religion. And in other words, a priest who is yawning or trembling and has goosebumps should be thrown to the ground and strip searched. But anyone from the Middle East who might have a sizzling backpack should not be taken aside because you may be arrested for using race or religion as a factor. That's the new government. Data says many medical marijuana cardholders are older than 50. Medical marijuana is being used to relieve pain by people of all ages and backgrounds, including the elderly, baby. They account, those 51 to 81 account for more than 35%. And they're old hippies. That's all they are. That's nonsense. They're old hippies who always smoked pot and got nowhere in their lives. Of course they want medical marijuana. It's free. They want you to pay for it on top of it all. Opponents of medical pot, however, are discouraged by the data. Carolyn Short, chairwoman of Keep Arizona Drug Free, campaigned against efforts to legalize pot and said the data suggests most patients are faking or exaggerating. Of course they are. Of course they're faking their problems. Most of them are schizophrenics who belong in a nut house rather than on medical marijuana. She believes Arizona's data indicates that nearly all patients are substance abusers based on research by an addiction psychiatrist who opposed the legalization of medical marijuana in 2010. Do I think there are people who aren't sick who are on that list? She asked. Absolutely. I think that people ought to listen to their doctors instead of their drug dealers. She said marijuana should be used only if a person has a terminal condition and doctors have exhausted all treatment and believe it is necessary. I don't have a problem with that, she said. I would say use the drug, the active ingredient, instead of smoking marijuana because the smoke itself is very toxic. And all you're doing is supporting the drug trade. You know that medical marijuana was supported by George Soros long before anybody else. I fought over this 15 years ago with a man whose name, I think it was Nadelman. I don't forget his name. He worked for old Georgie to bring the medical marijuana initiative in California and Arizona. They wanted to legalize pot. Now, why would George Soros want to legalize marijuana? You think it's because he's benevolent? It's because a drug-addicted population is an easily manipulated population. A drug-addicted population is an easily bamboozled population. A stone population is an easy population to fool. A stone population is a population that is made for a socialist government. That's why, don't you understand it? Marijuana is the most toxic of all drugs because people think it is innocuous. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. The local San Francisco website still will not cover the slaughter of the Jewish children because it'll create sympathy for Jews. As you well know, this is the heart of anti-Semitism in America here, San Francisco. Instead, they are covering other more important things, such as Kathy Bates was advised to keep her illness a secret, Romney making big California cash run next week. In other words, anything they can say against a Republican or a conservative is what their site is about. We have a sheriff who pled guilty to spousal abuse who will not resign. The new mayor, who is of Chinese descent, said that he gave him until today at 5 o'clock to resign. And the sheriff says, I do not plan to resign. Here's a sheriff pled guilty to spousal abuse, basically. He's not allowed to carry a handgun, and he won't leave his job. So this is an amazing city. It's the most corrupt, evil city in the United States of America. I think that even, I would believe that even New Orleans at its peak was not as corrupt as San Francisco is today. I won't even go over the bridge lately. I stay over the other side of the bridge now. I fear the city now has gotten so out of control with corruption, I won't even go over the bridge. I'm staying away from it. It's getting that bad and that dangerous. The infrastructure is broken down. The roads are broken. You go to the Golden Gate Bridge, the streets are broken going up to the Golden Gate Bridge. Where'd the billions of dollars go? Up whose nose did they go? Up whose nose do the billions of dollars in revenue go in San Francisco? They won't even patch a road going to the Golden Gate Bridge. It's unbelievable to me. You talk about poverty. Poverty is living in a city that is so broken down and people walk around like they're God Almighty. That's poverty. Poverty is living in a city without a major newspaper. Poverty is living in a city where the lie becomes the truth and truth is considered the lie. That's poverty. You want to know what poverty is? That's poverty. 1-800-449-8255. I've read an awful lot of stories to you, and the big news today is the one I put up on my website. I still don't see it anywhere else. I'm surprised that Matt hasn't picked it up on the Drudge Report, but I'm proud to say that during this show I found the story, and it's very important because the French have cleared the neo-Nazi suspects in Jewish shooting. I'm not a fan of neo-Nazis. I hate them. But the point was is they were trying to blame white supremacists for the killing of the children when it had all of the earmarks of Islamic extremism all over it. That's why it's an important story. And I found it in the Times of Israel. The French know what's going on. Even they're embarrassed by what the newspapers did yesterday. They're embarrassed by it. Las Vegas, Yanni, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, number one, the execution was Islamic Jihad style. I'm from Israel. This is how they do it. Did you see the angel face of the kid? Nobody can come with a pistol to her head and shoot her like that. This is Islamic Jihad.
You mean killing little children and shooting them in the head? I can't hear him. He lost him, I guess. He got lost in cyberspace. Fresno, Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Here's my take on it, Michael. The media has to stick to the narrative of the evil white man. And they know quite clearly that the first thing that is reported, the headline, is what people remember. People don't bother digging into the story the next day. They don't return to it. Mm. That first report is what's
so. In other words,
mind.
The big lie that they put out was that it was white supremacists who killed the Jewish kids should turn Jews against white supremacists, not against the Islamic murderers. Is that it?
I think so. They know that first thing that's put out is what most people hear, and then they go on to the next.
But did you see how they linked it originally? They said racists did it because the soldiers who were executed last week were executed by the same pistol. And when there was no proof of that, they never captured the pistol. They had no idea that it was the same gun.
They want to stick to that narrative, though.
And right, that they were picking on minorities. That was yesterday's story around the world. Minorities killed by white supremacists in France. That's what the storyline was, but it turns out to be a complete lie.
Yeah, but they know that's what people are going to remember. Today, they're not listening to your show. They're not digging into it any further. They're on to the latest Katy Perry.
Oh, God, it's awful. It's just so awful. I mean, this is why we have the class of politicians that we do running America and the West all together. I mean, how do you explain a man like Obama in the White House? You know he was never qualified. The man was an untested senator. An unproven, untested senator becomes president. That's one of the greatest stories of our life. Do you know that?
He was an absent senator as well.
I'm sending you trickle-down tyranny because apparently you're a man who likes to dig at the truth. It's the last chance to expose what we're living through here and how much worse it's going to get unless, God knows, I'm not a big fan of Romney, you know that. But compared to Obama, just on taxes and sleeping at night alone, I'll take Romney, to be honest with you. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff, we already covered. We asked about the poverty. Let's take a poverty call. Florida, Bruce, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Savage. Hey, we grew up, we didn't know we were poor. We didn't realize we were poor. When I'd go out and hunt 6 bottle caps for 4 kids, and to get in a free movie theater in Florida theater downtown every
Saturday. Oh, now what do you mean by bottle caps? What do you mean by that? I don't quite understand it. You turn the bottle caps in for cash?
If I can name the name, yes, sir. RC bottle caps. You get 6 of them.
No, that's okay. Well, how much did you get per cap?
You got into the movie free during the summer.
Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you felt quite well off being able to go to a movie because you collected the bottle caps.
They were treasures. Yes, sir. I mean, it was my job. I was the oldest. And
See, that's a beautiful story that I can relate to. You're from the Deep South. I'm originally a boy from the city, and yet poverty is poverty. And a kid doesn't know poverty unless he's hungry. That's my allegation. That's my position. Bruce, do you agree with me?
Yes, sir, I do. And I grew up with family and grandmothers and grandfathers.
Well, that's what made you a rich. That made you a rich man. Trickle down tyranny goes out to Bruce and anyone else who gets up on the Savage Nation. 1-800. Well, go to michaelsavage.com to see all the headlines, would you please?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The thing that we try to do is make sure the residence is on the second and third floor of the White House. And what we want to have happen is when they get off that elevator and walk in our residence, that it feels like the South Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. The same values, the same rules, the same sense of responsibility, because, of course, the stuff is different. There are butlers walking around.
You are listening to the First Lady of the United States telling us what we all feared to be true, which is that the White House has become exactly like the South Side of Chicago, with the same values, the same rules. I mean, it's astounding that they get away with this, but then again, you know why. You know why. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We have amazing sound, which is worthy of review here on the Savage Nation. You have Santorum's pastor, Dennis Terry. I mean, remember Reverend Wright, how they wouldn't let go of that with Obama? Well, whatever goes around comes around. Here's Santorum's pastor saying non-Christians should get out of the United States. He says there's only one God and his name is Jesus. And he says, get out if you don't worship Jesus. He says, we don't worship Buddha, we don't worship Muhammad, we don't worship Allah, we worship God, we worship his son Jesus.
I don't care what the liberals say. I don't care what the naysayers say. This nation was founded as a Christian nation. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. There's only one God. There's only one God, and his name is Jesus. If you don't love America and you don't like the way we do things, I got one thing to say. Get out! We don't worship Buddha. I said we don't worship Buddha. We don't worship Muhammad. We don't worship Allah. We worship God. We worship God's son, Jesus Christ.
So now that is Santorum's Reverend Wright moment. Wouldn't you say, Beowulf? That's Santorum's Reverend, I'm making a note, Reverend Wright moment.
Definitely the same tenor as Reverend Wright, too. Very vociferous gentleman.
Robert De Niro goes out there and says that the country is not ready for a white first lady again. Newt Gingrich jumps all over him and says it's unbelievable. Newt Gingrich is right for standing up for him. And it's unbelievable. And he says this is not about the first lady, this is about the president. And he goes on, the Newt Gingrich sound is good. Newt, give it to him.
I do want to say one thing on behalf of both my wife and on behalf of Karen Santorum and on behalf of Ann Romney, and that is I think Robert De Niro is wrong. I think the country's ready for a new first lady, and he doesn't have to describe it in racial terms. It has nothing to, these are fine ladies, as Michelle Obama, but this is not about the first lady. It's about the president. And that's where De Niro missed the whole point. De Niro is rich enough, he probably doesn't notice the price of gasoline. He's successful enough, he probably doesn't notice the unemployment rate. And as a Hollywood actor, he may well be short-sighted enough, he hasn't seen what the deficit's going to do to our children and our grandchildren. But what De Niro said last night was inexcusable, and the president should apologize for him. It was at an Obama fundraiser. It is exactly wrong. It divides the country.
David Letterman, the sycophant of the left, buck teeth and all, made another fool of himself by getting on his hands and knees and licking Michelle Obama's high heels.
The thing that we try to do is make sure the residence is on the second and third floor of the White House. And what we want to have happen is when they get off that elevator and walk in our residence, that it feels like the South Side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. The same values, the same rules, the same sense of responsibility, because, of course, the stuff is different. There are butlers walking around, you know? I mean, we didn't have that.
From CNN, fear, sadness, and incomprehension in the streets of Toulouse, France, after the killing of Jewish children. But that's old news. Romney says, I don't see how a young person can vote for a Democrat.
I don't see how a young American can vote for a Democrat. I apologize for being so offensive at saying that, but I mean that in the humor, I mean there's some truth there. And I say that for this reason. That party is focused on providing more and more benefits to my generation, and amounting trillion-dollar annual deficits my generation will never pay for. My party is consumed with the idea of getting federal spending down and creating economic growth and opportunity so we can balance our budget and stop putting these debts on you.
Rick Santorum calling Romney a Wall Street financier.
I heard Governor Romney here call me an economic lightweight because I wasn't a Wall Street financier like he was. Do you really believe this country wants to elect a Wall Street financier as the president of the United States?
Karen Santorum with Piers Morgan. Oh, I don't even want to. I can't believe this. Who would go on the Slimy Limey show? I turned them down. Apparently, politicians have no shame. They'll go anywhere. Hey, Baywolf.
Is he anti-women? Is he anti-us
not
having contraception? What is his view?
Not at all. He is not anti-woman. And I can tell you, I'm a registered nurse. I'm a lawyer. I'm an author of two books. When I was doing my book tours, Piers, Rick was the one who was home changing diapers and making meals and cleaning the kitchen. He's been 100% supportive of me and my dreams and my career. It makes me really sad that the media tries to do that to him. Women have nothing to fear when it comes to contraceptives. He will do nothing on that issue. I think the real issue was what I had said about the religious freedom issue and not allowing the government to be intrusive in our lives and force us to do something against our conscience.
Here are some of the questions for the Savage Nation today based upon all the news stories on michaelsavage.com, your one-stop shop for all the news of the day. A pastor who introduced Santorum by saying non-Christians should get out of the U.S., do you think he went too far? Or was he just saying you must respect the fact that we're a Christian nation? Do you fear Mitt Romney has been too badly beaten up by the others in the Republican side to even defeat Obama? Rick Santorum and Mitt Romney have received Secret Service code names. Rick is Petrus. Mitt is Javelin. What do you think Newt Gingrich... What do you think Newt Gingrich's service code name should be? How about Tubby? or the Big Belt? What about Ron Paul's Secret Service? How about Ron Paul's Secret Service name? Neuron, would that work? Do you agree with me that the FAA allowing cell phone use on airplanes will lead to murder and suicide on airplanes? These are some of the questions that we may or may not cover today on the Savage Nation. And now let's go to the rest of the website and see what made it up to the big board on michaelsavage.com. Obama order revises authority to nationalize resources for defense. What? What? Me worry? The Toulouse murderer of Jewish children had a video camera around his neck. It was the worst Jewish attack in France since 1982. If you haven't seen the Hillary and Bill picture from their hippie days with him in long hair and a beard looking like the wolf man and her looking like, well, just a college kid with big glasses and a radical face, you got to go see them on michaelsavage.com. Brings back fond memories for all of us. Were the killing of the Jewish kids in France, were the killings linked to Iran? Attention, American people. You want to stop Obama's dream of the socialist states of America? Well, go to michaelsavage.com or go to amazon.com and pre-order your copy today. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, working our way up now, 9/11 rescue dog gets new chance with stem cell therapy. That's cute. Jerry Lewis celebrates lavish 86th birthday in New York City. Good for him. Always one of my favorite people. Looks great. Got over his illness. Potheads driving, leading to deaths. Okay, that we know. Sex-addicted apes now endangered. I guess too much of a good thing. I don't know how to look at that one. 5% of Americans use 50% of the healthcare costs in the United States. No kidding. If you haven't seen Obama's TSA handlers humiliating and searching a 3-year-old in a wheelchair, you ought to watch it and send it around. Maybe one day we'll get control of our government again. The lump-faced dolt from the European Union lumps the murder of the Jewish children in France with other terrible circumstances in a speech to Palestinians. Media scrub reports of Obama's daughter in Mexico with 25 Secret Service agents. Hey, girls just want to have fun. Head of Obama's Jobs Council voting for Romney. Really? Didn't know that. Does he know that? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. All of this awaits you right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You have to listen to some of this audio, including Mitt Romney saying that he doesn't understand how young people can vote Democrat. He's right.
I don't see how a young American can vote for a Democrat. I apologize for being so offensive at saying that, but I mean that in the humor, I mean there's some truth there. And I say that for this reason. That party is focused on providing more and more benefits to my generation and amounting trillion-dollar annual deficits my generation will never pay for. My party is consumed with the idea of getting federal spending down and creating economic growth and opportunity so we can balance our budget and stop putting these debts on you.
And here's a pastor, before introducing Santorum, telling all non-Christians to get out of the United States. That's his Reverend Wright moment.
I don't care what the liberals say. I don't care what the naysayers say. This nation was founded as a Christian nation. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. There's only one God. There's only one God, and his name is Jesus. If you don't love America and you don't like the way we do things, I got one thing to say. Get out! We don't worship Buddha. I said we don't worship Buddha. We don't worship Muhammad. We don't worship Allah. We worship God. We worship God's son, Jesus Christ.
Finally, Rick Santorum calling Mitt Romney a Wall Street financier. Shame on you, Rick.
I heard Governor Romney here call me an economic lightweight because I wasn't a Wall Street financier like he was. Do you really believe this country wants to elect a Wall Street financier as the president of the United States?
My brain feels strange today. I don't know what it is. Did I eat something weird? I had calamari and french fries for lunch. I figure since the world's liable to go up any day, I may as well enjoy what I eat. Horrible shellfish. Oh, God, don't eat shellfish. I'm anti-shellfish again. The polluted shellfish coming out of Asia is something scandalous. You can't eat that stuff. It's frightening. I spoke to a chef who told me, don't eat tiger shrimp anywhere ever. It's sewer shrimp. He said, eat white shrimp. I don't know what a white shrimp is. What are you going to a restaurant? Is it white shrimp or tiger shrimp? Is that like bordering on racism if you say a thing like that? I don't even know anymore. Can I ask, is it tiger shrimp or white shrimp without having the police arrest me? But he said, don't eat the tiger shrimp. They're raised in polluted beds. So I don't eat it. You ever notice your joints hurt after shellfish? It's because they're polluted. You don't understand there's a relationship. That's why the drug companies, which own the food companies, which own the advertising companies, don't connect the dots for you. They tell you to take 16 Advil a day and then get a liver transplant owned by the liver transportation company that they own. Next, they're going to like make livers in a factory for you after blowing your liver out with Tylenol. So it's all crazy. I mean, you don't know which way to turn. So you can't eat shellfish. You can, but it's got to come from clean water. You don't know if the water's clean. Now, I know a lot of Italians listen to me, and they're in the shellfish business. I got to be careful. I got to tread on. And then they say, I ate it, and I could still knock your block. Okay, fine. I had that once with pot smokers, they would call me. Never mind. I smoke pot. I can still knock your behind. So what does that mean? That's nothing. You're still a jerk for smoking marijuana because of the toxicants. And get back to me when you're 65 and you have lung cancer, sir, because that's what you're going to get. From marijuana. So you can't eat that. Then you got scallops that come out of port. The scallops at least come from Canadian waters or Icelandic waters. Some of them I think they're cleaner. I never have trouble with like frozen large scallops when you defrost them. And the chef taught me another trick. Don't run water on them because it runs the flavor out of them. Keep the toxicants on them before you cook them. I bought frozen shrimp in Safeway. It was very good the other night. It has like a whole green packaging. It tells about green. But you have to search the label. You need a magnifying glass inside your magnifying eyeglasses to see where the shrimp come from. And these came from India. You know how clean those were. Can you imagine how far away that is to bring in food? But they were delicious. They smelled great. Joints hurt me right afterwards. Within 5 minutes, every joint in my body was aching me. Set off a shockwave. They didn't smell. They're just polluted, that's all. So what am I supposed to go back to? Gefilte fish? I mean, pike and whitefish, horrible food, the worst. It's leftover food. It's poor man's food. Nobody ate that in the old world of Europe except the poor. Poor Jews developed gefilte fish, pike and whitefish, because nobody else would eat the garbage. They were leftover fish in the fish store. So there's nothing left to eat on Earth. So you may as well eat what you want. And then take loads of fish oil, loads of vitamin E, loads of B vitamins, a major league multivitamin, at least 1 to 2 grams of vitamin C a day, and pray every day that God doesn't take you too soon. Then you'll be okay. It ends anyway. All roads lead to the same place. That's all. So here I am sitting here with my back to a wall. My back to a wall facing the nation, looking at the entire east. I'm looking east. East! Go east, young man. Go east. No one goes west. The most hated state in the world, in America, is California. The roads are broken. The people are broken. It's unbelievable. Horrible place. But since I'm deeply established here, I don't want to leave. I like the geography because liberals had nothing to do with it. They haven't changed the geography yet. They haven't polluted the air yet. They try to figure out how to pollute it with fireplaces because fireplaces are ecologically friendly, except to you next door who's dying like from lung cancer. You live in like a nice community with good air near the water, and you got a schmuck who has a peace sign on his driveway, and every night he runs a wood fire. The world is a far more dangerous place than it has ever been before, as we can see from the school shooting of Jewish children in France. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this is Frank Gaffney. Frank Gaffney, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
How did France fail in not protecting the Jewish children? And what should we be doing to prevent such attacks from taking place here in the United States?
Open societies, whether they're France's or ours, are inherently vulnerable to this kind of act of violence, presumably terrorism. Until we know a little bit more about who perpetrated it, it's a little hard to say what might have been done differently. Kids are going to congregate at schoolyards, and it's a very soft target. And to be honest with you, it's surprising to me that we haven't had more incidents either here or, for that matter, elsewhere in what I think of as the free world, where that such kids are targeted. The you know, Beslan incident in Russia was a particularly horrific example of this, but it could happen any time, truthfully. And short of shutting down the society or, you know, getting kids to school in armored vehicles, which are both unlikely. I think that vulnerability is going to persist. The only thing you can really do is try to make sure you have a handle on the kinds of people who would perpetrate such horrific acts. And that's a tough thing because there are lots of candidates for it. Again, once we have a better handle, assuming the French can break this case, on the sort of person who would one day apparently whack some military officers and another day go after children, you might have a better clue on what you need to do to at least go after people like that. But it's a very tough target to defend.
Are we doing enough to protect ourselves from these types of attacks, or certainly we could all be doing more?
I think what we're doing to try to make schools a little more secure is try to ensure that if there's an incident inside them, that you can lock the place down and try to protect the kids as best you can, that you've got quick reaction forces that are prepared to respond to an emergency. You may have police officers in some of the schools themselves. But again, if what you're talking about is kids coming to school, that's a whole different problem. And it's very difficult to ensure that, you know, nothing like this would ever happen, either here or anyplace else in the world. I have to say that if there is at work here something that has to do with an agenda that is defined by its adherents as Sharia, which is to say a totalitarian supremacist Islamic doctrine, that calls for everybody, Muslim and non-Muslim alike, to submit to it, then you can start working that problem. both the violent kind of jihad that this might be an example of, and as worrying to me, to be honest with you, is a more stealthy kind of violent, or pre-violent, I should say, jihad. And they've got it big time in France, and we've got it here in the United States. And that's something that it would be very useful to have a conversation about, you know, what more could we be doing to counter it?
I don't believe the Obama administration is doing enough to protect our schools from these type of attacks, do you?
To some extent, schools protection is a local matter, not a federal matter. And I think the closer that you are to local authorities' responsibility, the better, personally. That's, as far as I'm concerned, true of both what's done in the classroom as well as what can be done to try to protect it. I think in the absence of more evidence of more threats of this kind, the effort that's being made now seems about right. But if, God forbid, you know, you suddenly see this thing becoming a more serious threat to not just somebody else's kids and schools, but to ours, we'll have to revisit that. But I think at the moment, the thing that worries me is not what they're doing or not doing to protect our schools. It's what they're doing to embrace the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the prime promoter of this this so-called civilization jihad against us. And by the way, if you're worried about our schools, I would argue that you ought to be worrying about what's being done by organizations associated with the Muslim Brotherhood to promote their program, Sharia, Islam, inside our classes. That's a very toxic thing.
Do you actually believe that what happened in France could happen in the U.S. as I do here in the United States? I mean, you know, really, I do.
What I'm saying is it could happen here. It is one of many aspects of an open and free society that is vulnerable to such kinds of terrifying violence. I don't know whether it's likely that you'll see people emulating what has happened in France and in a few other places. Needless to say, I hope not. But my sense of it at the moment is, given the nature of the soft target of our schools, that we're doing about the right level of effort to protect them.
What can we, the people, do?
I think we've got to get clear about the nature of the enemy that we're confronting. And at the moment, as I say, because we don't have a perpetrator even identified, let alone in custody in France, it's presumptuous to say who conducted this particular attack. But again, my concern, and I think it should be all Americans' concerns, is not simply what people are doing through violence to promote jihad or Sharia, but also what they're doing through more stealthy means that are pre-violent. And that needs a much greater level of knowledge and awareness. We're in the process of putting together right now a course on the subject, as a matter of fact, that we hope will be helpful to people in understanding the kinds of threats we're facing. And that's a prerequisite, really, to being able to do anything about it.
Where can we read more?
Securefreedom.org is our website, and we will be having the course posted there or linked to from there.
Anyway, Frank Gaffney, you do a great job. Thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great to talk with you. Thanks so much for having me.
One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with. The ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage.
Country seems to be like a broken crystal, frankly, not to overuse the metaphor of crystal, but we are like a cracked crystal. And you know why? Because we have the most divisive president in American history who's pitting one against the other. Now, if you want to talk about any of this, this is the one-stop shop. The shooter, the school shooting. Remember when there was a phase when the Speaker of the House at the time, Nancy Pelosi, had sucking candies, when she got very arrogant? At the height of her arrogance with the hammer, she was into sucking candies. She was so, I don't know, enraptured with her power that she felt she could do anything, say anything. So she was into like sucking candies while talking, and became a national scandal, the sucking candy. In a way, you know, radio is like a small element of the entertainment business. I admit that. I have to live with myself. I was something before I was a talk show host. You know who I really don't like is that fat kid who thinks he's cool now. He always played like the nerdy schmuck in movies. Now they like gave him a new haircut and they give him a suit. And everywhere you turn, but he's still basically a backstabbing schmuck. And they're going to make a mistake with him and feature him as a lead soon in a movie. I don't know his name even. But everywhere you turn, there he is. Another one I used to like in the younger crowd that was good. Seth Rogen was good for about 3 years. 2-3 years, Seth Rogen was funny. Now he's starting to look like he takes himself seriously, and he doesn't look like the fat yuck that he really is, so I don't like him anymore. He was the kind of guy that everyone knew in the crowd. Everyone had a Seth Rogen friend. Now he got so big that he doesn't look funny anymore. I had a friend like that once. He thought he was funny. Everyone laughed at him, and he was really incredibly funny. We loved him. Then one day he thought he was a poet, and he tried to tell everybody he was really a poet, but I'm not really funny. I'm going to win a Nobel Prize. You can't believe people like this. Notice I'm trying to avoid serious topics. Slow going. Slogging through Gomorrah. It's only 40 minutes. I feel like the character in The Sopranos, you know, the fat guy who he goes on the lam after they find out that he's in gay clubs at night. What was his name, that character? He was great. I loved him. And he runs from Jersey, and he goes and lives in New Hampshire, and he gets a guy lover, and he's, you know, he needs a job. He's still the same guy. So the guy gets him a job as a handyman for like probably $7 an hour. He's an ex-mob guy. He has to make some money up there in New Hampshire. So it shows him working on a woman's house to make some money because he was in a construction trades. And he doesn't want to look at his watch because he's afraid to see the time is going too slowly. So they show him, you know, lifting sacks of cement and working in the garage, and it's freezing, and then he's working the saw, and he's looking at the sun, and he says to himself, must be 10:30 by now. I'll wait. I won't give myself a reward, even a water, till 11:30. Then about an hour later, it must be 11:30 by now. Half an hour's lunch. Then after lunch, it's almost over. He looks at the watch, it's 9:30 in the morning. That's what the show feels like today. I don't know why. I got to tell you, I'm gonna drift for a minute. You know the iPhone, which I don't own? I don't own an iPhone. I own a primitive joke phone that people laugh at. I own the Samsung Rugby, the kind of phone you can drop from a window like a Remington shaver years ago, you know, a Timex, and it bounces and it works. You could drop it in a toilet bowl, you know, and it'll come up and gurgle and it'll work. But the reason I bought it is it has big numbers on it, right? And I don't text. If I get a text, I look at it. I don't like texts that come to me because they're too small for my eye. It hurts my eyes. And I got over-magnified glasses, everything. So I read them and I immediately erase. I don't like texting. There's something creepy about a text. Even if, you know, it's funny, I'm from another age. If I get a text, it seems like it's perverted. Even if it isn't, it would be like, meet me at the stationery store to buy those clips that you asked for. Someone seems like I want to report it to the FBI. I think someone's stalking me. There's something about texting that I don't trust. So anyway, I don't have an iPhone. Now, how long am I going to be able to hold out? I go on a boat last week in Florida. A friend owns a big boat, a really big, beautiful yacht, 161 feet. I go on it for one night to experience. And I see a lineup of the moon, a crescent moon, and the next planet, which I know is Venus, and then there's another planet lined up in a row. So one of my guests, one guest says to me, what's that third object up there? Is it a star or is it a planet? I said, I don't know. Let's ask one of the crew members. So a young guy takes out an iPhone, I swear to you. He says, hold on, I'll give you the answer. And he presses an app he has for $1.99, like astronomy app. He points it at the star constellation, rather the formation, the astronomical formation. And within 2 seconds, it says Sun, Venus, Uranus, and then it shows all of the formations around it. I was so knocked out that I have to buy an iPhone. You don't know this about me. When I was a kid, I was very heavily into astronomy. I loved astronomy. Why, I don't know. Doesn't mean anything special. I just loved astronomy. Most kids do. I think it's because I built a star box where you put a flashlight on the inside, which is the sun, and you poke pins in a black sheet of paper, and then you flash it, and you show it to the other kids in the classroom, and there's Cassiopeia, you know, there's the Big Dipper, Little Dipper, and everyone thought I was Einstein. So I never got over that, and I'm still looking for that hit. That was such a beautiful accolade that I'm still looking to build my next Starbucks, and I don't even like their coffee, to be frank with you. But nevertheless, I think I'm going to... Nevertheless, they have the worst coffee in the universe. I hope they don't advertise. Man, how do they get away with that? How in the world does a chain get away with coffee that is undrinkable? Now, they give you the free vanilla, they give you the free cocoa, they give you the milk, and you got a lot of grifters in there. Oh, I could never own a coffee shop personally. I throw people out. I come in here, I see bums eating a lunch from somewhere else. Bums with a computer, they don't buy even so much as a coffee in Starbucks. They own it, though. The feet are up, they got everything spread out, napkins, they got their thing, and they're sitting typing their resume, whatever they're doing. They don't buy anything from them. Where did it originate that you can go into a place of business in the United States of America, whether it be a Starbucks or Starcrossed, whatever the shop may be, and sit there for nothing and not buy anything from the store? Answer, when it was no longer owned by the guy in the back, the store owner, he was no longer like a guy who owned the business, will kick you out if you did that. Corporations, you could do anything you want. So they sit there, a computer, they don't even buy the coffee there. They come in with the coffee from Safeway in a container, and a sandwich dribbling on the floor. But as I say, the coffee's horrendous. What I do like when I go in there is I cheat on my diet in there. That's all I do. It's also a nice decor. It's a nice place to visit. I wouldn't want to drink coffee there. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. It's okay. I'm taking it easy today. It's in my head. I know you don't think the show is as slow. Slow. Very sloggy, slogging through. It's like the movie Gray. I feel like I'm in snow without snowshoes. You ever? It's like walk through snow without snowshoes, and your foot goes in up to your crotch. That's what the show feels like. I feel like I'm walking through a snowfield where each step I'm going in up to my crotch, and I have to yank the foot out to take the next step. I don't care for the dictator guy with the throwing the ashes on him. I think he's a Schmendrick now. He was good when he did Borat. That was funny. The first shout out. I didn't like the gay movie. That was horrible. Mocking gays. I thought that was disgusting. Who's Harvey Weinstein? How did he get his start? How did he get so powerful? He looks like a guy I knew in high school. Oh, I can tell you a few Harvey Weinstein stories, but I'd get sued. Oh, yeah, I know people did business with him. They have stories to tell about him. Let's put it to you this way. Everything you see in his face is true. Everything you suspect about Harvey Weinstein is accurate. The portrait of Dorian Gray, accurate, etc. So if you were to put Harvey Weinstein's face next to Warren Buffett's face, basically you have the same man with a different persona. But it's the same personality, in my opinion. What's going on? I also don't like her. Meryl Streep, I could do without her. She was good many years ago. I'm not going to go into fat and old, okay? That happens to everybody. Time and gravity catches up with everybody, yours truly included. It's not the fact that she's overweight. What do I care? There are many people who are hefty who are incredible people. Not personally do I know any, nor do I know any currently in the public eye who are like that, but there have been in history. I'm trying to think of a few. Orson Welles. Orson Welles in the film business was hefty and an incredible genius. Meryl Streep, on the other hand, because of what she did to the Iron Lady, Thatcher, I hate her. I will never, ever, ever, ever go to one of her movies again. And that should affect her deeply, I'm sure. Could you see why Could you see why I'm never going to run for office? Remember when I told you I'll never run for office? See, other people in radio have made the mistake of thinking they're politicians. They've either danced around it or I might do it. They never do it. They make the mistake of thinking that they're not in the media or that people really would vote for them. How about that guy Al Franken? Remember that schmuck, Saturday Night Live? He got the job. He stole the election, in my opinion, by, like, you know, tricking the votes. Becomes a senator, and he goes on the floor of the Senate, and he starts being major league Brooklyn pushy schmuckola. Within 3 weeks, the Democrats shut that slob's mouth. They probably pulled him aside and said, listen, fatso, here's how it works. You're a senator now. You're not on television. If you ever want to see a red cent going into your state, ever, shut your trap. Don't say a word unless it comes from the DNC. You've never heard from him again, right? What does he do up there?